On this episode of Skeptico, author and influential thinker in the emergent church movement, Spencer Burke.
Let's say 10,000 years from now, the Christian church or the Christians look back at us in the early nostalgic age of early Christianity in the year 2000, you know. Think about all the understanding and knowledge and discovery that they will have had. And it might even give us a little bit of freedom to be able to hold things a little bit loosely, in the sense of saying, what I have right now, if I lose it, I lose who I am. That's a difficult place to be. But if you say, here's who I am today, now I have the freedom and strength in this position and place to continue to journey and move forward without the fear or worry of discovering, learning, growing, evolving, whatever word you want to use, you know, maturing in the way. Everything from science to religion has language to be able to let you do that. Why are we so afraid of that?
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and for those of you who've been following the show for a while, you might realize that we've kind of been going down two tracks. One track, of course, is exploring the science of consciousness. This has more or less been the mainstay of the show. We've primarily focused on evidence that this here-now mind model of consciousness, if you will, that is that everything that makes you, you, is generated by your brain right here and right now, and that's obviously the prevailing model in science. What we've been focusing on is that that model, that paradigm, is more or less being swamped by data that suggests otherwise. So on this show, we've interviewed Rupert Sheldrick in Morphic Residence and Dean Radin and Presentiment and Remote Viewing and Global Consciousness Project and on and on and on. And lately we've been looking at near-death experience. All these phenomena and the data that the research into them has generated contradicts this model that our mind is generated by what our brain is doing right here, right now, that chemistry. And overturning that model has such a profound effect for just about every area of science that you look at that, well, it really deserves a lot of attention that we've given it on this show to really understand what that research is telling us. At the same time, of course, we've had to look at the opinions of the holdouts, the skeptics, the folks that are saying, not so fast. And this point of view is probably best expressed by Dr. Richard Wiseman, who's been a guest on the show a couple times, and who takes the position that, well, sure, all that data is great, but it's not enough to convince me. It may be enough for any other field of science, but for such a revolutionary idea, it's not enough. It falls under this extraordinary claims, extraordinary proof thing that you've heard me talk so much about on this show. So that's been the mainstay of Skeptico, along with, well, let's add to that first track this idea that we've explored, which is, what do these new understandings of consciousness, how might they affect religious thought and the culture war issues of science and religion? And that's been something we've explored as well on this show, and really looking at how, in a lot of ways, many of the traditional religious institutions that we deal with, at least in the West, are just as wed to this model of materialism, this model of here-now brain. They're just as wed to it as some of the old-school scientists that we've talked to. So all that's well and good, but as some of you might have picked up, and I hope you've picked up by now, there's also this other track that I've been starting to explore because it interests me greatly, and that is, where do we go with this new paradigm? So you jump the chasm of the here-now mind model, and you say, okay, the data is so overwhelming that that model of consciousness, that it's all right here formed by my brain, that really doesn't seem to fit the data anymore. So I'm going to go to the other side. I'm going to accept these new understandings. Where do I go from there? And some of the questions that emerge out of that are quite challenging. For example, what might it mean to say that our consciousness seems to survive our bodily death? I mean, what are the implications for that beyond science? What are the personal implications for that? What are the spiritual implications for that, however you define spirituality? So as you can see, and as you've heard in some of the recent episodes, these kind of questions send us in a different direction, in a direction beyond pure science. And I think that's necessary if we're really going to try and wrap our arms around the meaning of this new paradigm shift. And that's certainly in line with today's show. Because on today's show, I'm going to introduce you to Spencer Burke, an author and thinker who's really been at the center of something called the Emerging Church Movement, or the Emergent Church Movement, or the Progressive Church Movement. It has a bunch of different names. But the idea behind this, and why I find it so interesting, is that it jumps outside of this win-lose culture war paradigm that we've had on science and religion, and it starts asking the kind of questions that I think you ask when you get to this new model of consciousness. Now, Spencer has always been somewhat of a maverick among Christians, all the way from the 60s when he was part of the Jesus People movement, and he was one of the first people in what has been dubbed as the seeker-driven Christianity movement. But as you'll see in this dialogue with Spencer, the ideas that he has and what he brings to the table really transcend Christianity per se and get at the deeper issues of how we deal with who we are in light of information that can seriously challenge our belief systems. And that's what I think Skeptico has been about, looking at information, data, science that seriously challenges our belief systems and causes us to rethink these fundamental questions of who we are. So in that sense, I think a look at the Christian Emergent Church movement is really central to a lot of the issues we've been talking about here in Skeptico. I really enjoyed the opportunity to dialogue with Spencer. I really connected with a lot of his ideas, and I hope you'll enjoy this interview with Spencer Burke. Tell us what the emergent church, the postmodern church, the progressive church, just for someone coming in cold, what's this about?
Yeah, the beauty of it is someday somebody's going to write the history and we'll kind of know. But from a little bit of an insider and now almost a little bit on the outside observing it from another direction too, is that it was this wonderful, amazing quest to ask some questions rather than seeing Christianity as kind of married to the modern project. The whole idea of postmodernism, again, I don't think there'll be a postmodern church, but the church has been affected by postmodernity. And so I think of all the questioning as much as the answers. It's the breaking away from hierarchy and institutions for institutions' sake. There's a strong sense of trying to be non-dualistic. I mean, that's a huge part of it. And also kind of embracing an ever-evolving or progressive or progressing way of seeing all things.
See, because what I see when I look at this emergent church movement, and it's coming from this perspective that we've had on this show in terms of following the data wherever it leads and looking at what the scientific foundation might be for these spiritual experiences that people do seem to have, and it's pretty much undeniable from a scientific standpoint. What I see in the emergent church is a willingness to face the truth in a little bit more direct way than we kind of expected. And the truth being, in terms of New Testament scholarship and everything we've learned over the last 50 years and letting go of this inerrant Bible, letting go of this divinely inspired book, letting go of this idea that Christianity is somehow singularly the path. And I think that there's such a freedom in letting that go and such an opportunity that I love the term emergent, because I think so much can emerge by letting that go. And I guess my question is, am I misreading that?
I do think that, but I also, in the sense that, like, I have a little personal saying. I say, if I'm not a little embarrassed about what I said yesterday, I probably didn't learn anything today, you know? So there's a sense of humility that comes along with, I think, following in the way of Jesus. But it also has this beautiful non-dualistic way of approaching it. So if someone does subscribe to a certain set of understanding, you know, It's when they force that on another person to the extent of control that it's difficult. I think of Thomas Merton as kind of, way before his time. Here's this Christian who's a Catholic, and a mystic, but he ends up, even on his last meeting out in, I think it was Bangkok, speaking to a group of Buddhist monks that are within a mystical tradition. And so it's not that he ever left who he was. In fact, he was invited because of his rootedness or groundedness in his understanding. But he didn't have to judge another for his point to be valid. He didn't have to destroy another person to somehow validate his own position.
One thing I really enjoyed, and I again have to point people to your website, which is really like a portal to so many different streams that you can tap into. So if anyone's at all interested in this topic and what might be emerging out of this new rethinking of Christianity, I really encourage you to check out Spencer's website. But one of the video productions I saw, which again is just extremely well done, was this interview with Brian McLaren. I really loved, his questions of what this new Christianity might be. And I particularly honed in on the last one because I thought it takes what you just said about embracing other religions / wisdom traditions, whatever you want to call it. But it really took it one step further. And it's more that just that, hey, I'm not going to cop some superior attitude over the Buddhist. It was fully, fully embracing that these other wisdom traditions may be just as valid, maybe more valid, maybe who knows, but that we can fully embrace other people who are having these spiritual experiences and these spiritual understandings, and we might fully learn from where they're coming from. And I think that's such an interesting balancing act for a Christian to consider that they could really do both without one being superior or better or holding back and saying, yeah, but mine really is a little bit better.
I wrote a book called Making Sense of Church, and it was a little line in there that kind of didn't get caught any attention, originally, and then just recently has gotten in a lot of hot water. And I'm like, that's a pretty old book, But it was basically this idea of Thich Nhat Hanh. I think the book was Living Buddha, Living Christ. And he talked so strongly about Jesus as the way, the truth, the life. Now here, I'm coming from a conservative evangelical seminary, 22 years in ministry. I mean, I've been preaching on this. And here is this wonderful, amazing, beautiful man, who Dr. King had nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. Merton called him a closer spiritual brother. But he's someone who I'm not allowed to preach on, talk about, or even read. He's off the evangelical approved list, But what he said was thinking about Jesus as the way. Not as a definitive article, but the way as in the Tao, in the direction, the absolute God imprint, And I'm like, that's it. That makes sense. So the person who brought one of the largest Christian conversions in my life was a Buddhist monk. that's just a fascinating idea.
It is fascinating. And Spencer, it's amazing that you'd reference Thich Nhat Hanh and in particular that book, because I can remember specifically the moment, I was actually listening to the book on tape, but I remember the moment that I heard that just recently, and I sent you this clip. I had a really interesting interview with Dr. Jeff Kripal, who is the head of the Department of Religion at Rice University, and is really looking at things from a comparative religion thing and has some other ideas about where this whole thing might be going. If I can, I wanted to play you that clip and see where that might take this conversation we're having. Is that okay?
I have no desire to return to a religious worldview that is essentially dysfunctional now. I'm thinking more of creating a new religious worldview, not me personally, mind you, but as a culture. When religious systems start out, nobody knows where they're going, and they never, ever, ever come out of nowhere. They're always syntheses or fusions of the scientific knowledge of the time and the different cultures that are interacting. And so, you know, where I place my hope isn't on Church A or Synagogue B or Scientist X. It's the future generations who can put this stuff together in a completely new way.
Any thoughts on that?
Right. Well, I wrote another book called Heretic's Guide to Eternity, and it was a whole conversation about the idea of institutional religion and spirituality. Again, I don't think we have to destroy one to get the other, because, again, spiral dynamics would invite us to allow everyone at every level to engage, you know. So I want to be generous and not rude, I guess, to all those on their spiritual journey. But I would say as soon as I think I've got something, it changes. And as soon as I begin to feel comfortable with something, my son, who's 12, is going to say, wait, Dad, couldn't it be this way? And I may even have to, in love, let go of some of the comfortable things in my own personal journey to embrace him in his journey as we journey together as well. So there's just so many different factors in playing this. But no, I do not believe in a static or stagnant, you know, relationship with God.
I think that's awesome. For me personally, I'm totally on board with you. But if we take a step higher and we kind of wrap ourselves around this culture that we live in and these institutions that we have to navigate through in our life, can we get there from here? I think that's what Kripal's really getting to. Can this institution that still has a very, very pervasive kind of influence on our society, and that is traditional Christianity, can it make that leap?
I can only speak on a personal level. And so when I talk about kind of my last 10 years in the emerging church, and then now moving more into this next resource church, another good friend of mine, Ori Brofman, wrote a book called Starfish and the Spider. And he talks about hybrids. And I can't remember exact, so I'll probably botch this, but check the book. But this is the basic idea, the reference is, he talks about movements like Alcoholics Anonymous would have never happened without the Quakers, you know, because it was the network of those people that allowed this message to kind of be shared and change lives all over. But again, it's because the institutional church rejected this program that he had brought to the church. So One part of the church might embrace it while the other doesn't, but we know that what's alive and real, you know, will last and move forward. And those things that are dead will be able to be the fertilizer of what's next. In Southern California, you know, they wipe it all out and whatever, but in some ways, that's the only way the next new seedlings can pop up.
Hey, I hear you, and you're coming through loud and clear that you're not wedded to the institution of Christianity, but only using what you can resource out of it to propel you on your spiritual journey. I think that's great. I mean, if I'm hearing you right, is that more or less?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Then let's talk a little bit about, since I can't pin you down on the culture war thing there, and I think you're smart to avoid it because it's a nowhere discussion. But let's talk a little bit about another thing that fascinates me about this spiritual journey and the way people process it. And it came up also with my interview with Jeff Kripal, and I don't have this clip for you to play, but it's this idea, and I hear it from Christians and non-Christians alike. And I think it's also interesting that I haven't really heard it from you, which I like. I like the fact that I haven't heard it. And that's this it works thing. So, you know, you push a Christian with the apologetics and, hey, does this really measure up or that? If you get into that kind of debate, you know, and then what you will invariably hear is, hey, this works for me. This works for me in my life for the last 20 years. Following the Bible in this way has worked for me, which I think on one hand is great, you know, but on another hand, I think there's a lot of people, myself included, that need to push that a little bit further, because we all know that if we just go with what works, it can lead us in all sorts of strange places. And we can view other people out there who maybe we think have led to not so great places, that David Koresh's or whatever religious cult, Jim Jones, say, hey, weren't they just following what works?
Right. Well, so a lot of times people try the things that work and that guides them to that point. Here's a great example. When people say, wait a minute, we're supposed to be light of the world. That's what Jesus called us to be. And I'm like, I love it. That's great. But institutional Christianity and kind of old world Christianity that kind of pushes away from science, pushes away from other ways of thinking about our kind of progressive way of thinking about our relationship with God, tend to say, let me tell you what light is. And they'll say, you know, you need a match, you know, you need some oil or some fuel for it, and you need oxygen. Well, the problem is I don't live in that world anymore. So when I think of light, I'm actually thinking about trying to get an alternated current, you know, that's invisible. You know? And then I'm looking for things that would be like gases or filaments, you know, and just to make it brighter doesn't mean that I have to throw more wood on. It may be just changing what I'm trying to illuminate.
So let me refine that a little bit. Is there an inherent tension between what works and what's real? Because the mystic's journey, and you're saying some really mystical things, which are no problem for me. I like living in that world. But I like balancing that world with this other world that we live in. So is there an inherent friction between the mystic and the scientist?
Well, and what I think is the next possible future is to see some of these things wed, you know, rather than divided. And so there are times when I think the science so informs us to a point. Well, here's a simple kind of illustration. My friend Michael Dowd, you know, he wrote Thank God for Evolution. And he comes from much more of a scientific point of view, whatever. But it's like the idea of original sin. You know, it was kind of this mystical idea that, oh, we're all bad. And, you know, and it's kind of beating ourselves up or whatever else. Well, Michael goes on to kind of explain that, hey, if you have a reptilian brain, but really the God breath in us is the frontal lobe, the ability to reason and think, you know, when I start out, when someone starts to attack me, my ability to reflect God is to reason with them, not just punch them out at first. You know what I mean? I've got to be careful of my weight. Well, long ago, if nuts and fats and sweets would give me one extra day, you know, because I wouldn't get killed on the way to the refrigerator now, but it's a problem. I have to kind of struggle with it. You know, the idea of sexuality. I have the ability to mate with everything, but at this point, that's not necessary. I can make a choice for fidelity. You see, all of these things that we've typically considered as sins really are just choices. So the science begins to allow me to understand words like Paul, where, you know, I struggle. I do the things I don't want to do and the things I want to do and I don't do. Oh, and I'm fighting against the old man, the new man. I'm going like, wow, that could help me understand the idea of my instincts that are fighting against the possibility of making choices now. But it's not that I'm a bad person or all. It's more that these are my inclinations, and if the world was wiped out again, they'd be good inclinations. They keep survival going, and they would be important, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, except it opens up the whole can of worms about evolution in terms of how valid it is as a theory, and purely from a scientific standpoint, it's just more like a collection of loose ideas that seem to fit some places and not other ones. And I'm not sticking any kind of ID label in there. I'm just saying that gets back to this culture war, and it's this push against, and it's like we're so against fundamentalist Christianity, creationism, that we invent this thing over here called evolution that, heck, you know, the guy didn't even understand cell biology and DNA. You know, he's a great giant in science for his time. But do we really want to follow him like a religion when it just doesn't make sense? I mean, in a lot of ways. So there's something more. And I'm not saying, again, that it was.
I totally understand. And sometimes it's the metaphor that comes out of an understanding. Like, again, I am not trying to defend one thing or another. I think that's the beauty of also the position that we could take, is that the story? I mean, like, so some people might fight for a literal understanding of creation. Others might fight for evolution or the idea, you know, I mean, all of these kinds of things. I'm saying, where can we come to some common ground and understanding with this without trying to make one person right or wrong? I mean, I think that's the hard part, is I think we're moving into a non-dualistic world that allows...
Yeah, but I'm not sure I want to move totally there. I mean, that gets me back to, you know, Jeff Kripal, and that's exactly what he says. Hey, let's look at the narrative and let's look at these things as a narrative, you know, and hey, I'm okay with that, you know, as far as it goes. But I do think I have, and a lot of other people, because our culture is kind of geared this way, have a need for the scientific truth, which is a tricky proposition. And so what I'd throw out on the table, and then maybe we can move on and
this topic,
but is the Dalai Lama, you know, who famously says, hey, if science were to prove that any Buddhist teaching is incorrect scientifically, then Buddhism would have to change because we're about the truth. I just think that's just so profoundly obvious, and yet it so isn't a part of what we understand Christianity to be. I mean, I think the world would change if every pulpit on Sunday, the pastor, the preacher, whoever stood up there and said, hey, you know, we're just about the truth. So, you know, there really isn't any culture war here. Whatever the truth turns out to be, that's okay, because that's what we're about. That's what Jesus was about. That's what this whole thing is about, is finding the truth. So,
right.
But you don't hear that. Instead, we've introduced this struggle like, hey, your truth is not my truth, and we can't really find the truth. Or this fallback position that I really am not totally comfortable with is, hey, it's all a narrative. You know, this kind of postmodern,
right.
There are no real truths. Well, there's some element of truth to that, because our culture influences all these things.
Right.
But most of us feel like, especially men, you know, we feel like, hey, there's something in there that is more true than something else.
Right. Well, try this. It may be a third way. And that is evolving absolutes. See, and I think that's what you're saying, is we hold a truth to be true until we learn that it's not true. You know what I mean? And then it's either, you know, ignorance up to that point, and then it's stupidity not to somehow integrate that into our understanding. You know, take for instance, I mean, and anyone who says that they're a literalist and, you know, you can't change a jot or tittle from the scriptures or whatever, you know, you just take the case of slavery. There is no way of justifying slavery as immoral based on scripture. It's just impossible. Paul talks about it. You know, the whole book of Philemon is about taking back a slave, you know, masters, treat your slaves. That's not employment by any stretch of imagination, you know. But there are a ton of other scriptures that talk about neither slave nor free, male or free. I mean, all of these kinds of concepts, but they seem like they're in direct opposition. Well, eventually we came to a place where we go, wait a minute, we cannot own another human being. Even though people justified ownership of a human being by scripture. I think they're doing that right now with women. Some would say that they might even be doing it with gays. You know, so there is this sense that I think we always have to be ready as the information comes. Again, this can come from science, from observation, from understanding, and it might even come from a mystical tradition. I don't know. But it allows us to live our lives each day within boundaries, you know, but always open to the possibility or that the next is coming. And I think that's what the emerging church or emergence has done for us. But it also allows us not to get wed to that, but always ready and open and able to adopt to the next.
Yeah, and there's so many different ways to pull it apart.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Wow, this is fascinating. I love that. And again, without the whole context, I heard just a little bit and read some of the stuff. But I hope some of this helps expose some people. Like I said, there are thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people that are kind of just beginning to ask these questions. And I think what may happen is they'll create, you know, other, just like you stepped up and said, hey, you know, I'm going to create this website and this podcast, you know. And I think that's what happens, is we inspire each other to kind of move forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've certainly tried to do that, but it's amazing. You know, everyone's, like you said, everyone's at a different place and everyone can do different things. And we all, you know, just have to do the best we can. What I've kind of tapped into, and I think it's
I'm sure, a reflection of where I am coming from or where I've been, is I think there's a lot of people who label themselves as atheists. I think there's a lot of people who label themselves as scientifically minded. They wouldn't go quite as far as atheism, but, you know, but they haven't been really approached from where they're coming from.
Yeah.
You know? So people hit them with either a condescending or a, you know, adversarial kind of thing, rather than to say, you know what, thank you. You've done a lot of good things here.
Yeah.
But let's also hold you accountable to what you espouse to, because you espouse to, and that's my angle, you know, you espouse to critical thinking, you espouse to logic and reason. Okay, let's apply those here and see if we don't get to this other place, which is spirit seems to be real from the best we can tell. Consciousness seems to survive death. I mean, that's my whole thing.
Yeah.
If you get to the point and you say that, hey, if science has established that consciousness survives death, as best, and we don't understand all that means, but that seems to be what the data is saying, don't we have to go back and look at all those people that you were kind of scoffing at over there, all those Christians, all those Buddhists, all those other folks? Don't we have to maybe go and revisit them and just see, because they were saying that all along, and maybe they had some of the details right, but maybe their overall ontology was a little bit closer to what we're finding out than what you thought. You know, I mean, that's
right,
pretty humbling
right.
too.
Well, and you know what's fascinating is in this next turn of events, I think a lot of the things that, you know, the pendulum just swung so hard in some ways with the emerging church. And I love that, but it's also got to find some reality. And that's what my quest is. So listening to you, it's almost like some of these seemingly contradictory ideas can emerge.
Right,
I think.
Exactly.
So like I see you developing a postmodern apologetic.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And it, like in my book, Main Studies of the Church, I was struggling with the idea of saying, oh, evangelism is just evil. And I'm like, no, just evil evangelism is evil. You know, leadership's bad. No, just bad leadership
right,
is bad.
Right, exactly.
Isn't there good leadership, good evangelism? And I think what you're doing with this in a beautiful way is you know, creating that hybrid. I mean, and that's what I think this next thing is. It's not the, I mean, in some ways, the emerging church was as dualistic as the modern world,
uh-huh,
you know?
Yeah.
And now we can move into this hybrid place that allows us to have these seemingly contradictory things begin to be expanded and explored. And that, I think, is going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's going to be part of what you're doing. I would love to continue in this journey and hear and see and watch that thing develop.
Well, I'll make sure that that happens, you know, and just to build on your last point, I mean, I think that's why I tapped into Jeff Kripal so much. You know, it's like I used to be in my business life, you know, and I had a little company and all that. But I remember my sales training when the guy said, if you're selling a suit and a guy comes in and he puts on the jacket and he says, hey, that looks nice. He's not buying the jacket. But if he puts it on, he kind of wiggles over this way and tucks this way and pulls that way, that guy's buying the jacket because he wants it just right, you know? So when I dialogue with Jeff Kripal and he says, hey, it's about the narrative, you know? It's not, we can't just be science. Or the way Marcus Borg says it, it's poetry plus, not science minus, you know? It irks me.
Yeah.
It irks me a little bit because I go, well, wait a minute. You know, what really is the truth? But at the same time, I'm drawn to that because I think, as you're alluding to, that's the evolution. The evolution is, hey, you know what? It really
right.
is the narrative, you know? And we're all just telling ourselves a story. And we can look and see where our stories mesh and where we have this consensus reality. But we always have to check back and remember, it is just a story.
Yep, yep, yep. No, I agree. Well, and, you know, our ability, see, and that's the other part is our ability to begin to grasp and understand it today. And I probably should have said this, but basically, I think the thing is going to be interesting is because I take a long view of history personally. And so let's say 10,000 years from now, the Christian church or the Christians look back at us in the early nostalgic age of early Christianity in the year 2000, you know, think about all the understanding and knowledge and discovery that they will have had. You know, it's kind of looking back, you know, at the first century church or whatever, you know, we just didn't have some of the tools to be able to understand what we know now.
I think that's so insightful, and it points the way towards where that place might be. You know, it sends your mind in a completely different place, doesn't it?
Well, and it might even give us a little bit of freedom to be able to hold things a little bit loosely, you know, in the sense of saying what I have right now, if I lose it, I lose who I am. That's a difficult place to be. But if you say, here's who I am today, now I have the freedom and strength in this position and place to continue to journey and move forward without the fear or worry of discovering, learning, growing, evolving, whatever word you want to use, maturing in the way that everything from science to religion has language to be able to let you do that. Why are we so afraid of that?
Spencer, you are onto something there. I think that's awesome. That's really beautiful. And I haven't heard anyone really articulate it in that way. So, great. I am really, really fascinated to see where that goes for you. Tell us a little bit about where you're going, where the ooze is going, and why that is the next natural progression, at least from the way that you see it.
You know, I consider myself kind of a host or a scout or maybe a guide. And so I don't know if I'm heading down a rabbit trail or whatever, but for me, I've got a journey down this way. So, for instance, with the ooze, we're actually going to archive the first 10 years and make it the first electronic document of some movement within the church and donate it to a seminary, you know. So that's going to be interesting. And so there'll be an archive part, and then there'll be an active part, which is, again, the message boards and articles, because there's just tens of thousands of people just discovering this idea. And again, you've got to make room for everybody at each level to begin to engage it. So that will continue on. Where I'm moving on to, and again, I just set up my own personal website, spencerburke.com, where I'm going to start to explore some of these ideas. But I'm actually going to go back, I think, into a hybrid way of rethinking what the church is and the expression of the body of Christ as it's sent out in Scripture, whatever. And I think it's pretty much moving beyond the institution of religion and church, but moving more towards a divested church, or I'd say in a positive way, a resourced church. And so I think that some of the electronic tools that have helped people be able to, you know, share their ideas, let's say, you know, on the web. So people have been able to write books without having to have a publisher. They've been able to create songs and movies without having to be greenlit projects, you know. And the other part is, I think, people who have felt disenfranchised by institutions in the past, haven't been able to find a life mate, well, all of a sudden a website comes up. And it's not that there's online marriages, but I'm talking about tools that help people create physical things on the other side. That's where I think part of this next game is going to move, is kind of flattening the structure and allowing people to begin to engage their world with what I think the gospel is: love God, love your neighbor as you love yourself. And so I think there'll be a social aspect of this, of how to volunteer and give to your community and to the world. I think there'll be a relational aspect of people who feel disenfranchised being able to connect with each other. And so we're playing with the idea of resourcing the way of Jesus. It's kind of a church that's built more on a smart mob than it is on a hierarchical structure kind of idea.
Well, it certainly sounds exciting, and we look forward to seeing how that evolves. It's quite a project you're taking on there. You're really suggesting that you're going to wrestle controls from some pretty powerful institutions. But hey,
yeah,
every revolution starts that way. Right.
Well, and not thinking necessarily in a dualistic way. I mean, I think the traditional church will be around forever, and it'd be rude to try to steal that from, you know, my relatives, quite honestly. They love that. And Barna is telling us this, that 25 million people have left the church in the past few years. And then Bill Heibel was telling us with a Revealed study that they've left for all the right reasons. These are people right. who don't want to sit in a pew and stare at the back of the heads of people. They want to get out in the streets and serve people, you know, and on occasion they want to dig deeper for that truth, you know, and not have a kind of a sugared down kind of idea. And again, I'm not trying to say that that's bad, but it's not for me. It would not bring life to me. I'm very strong and clear about that. But that doesn't mean that I could just sit around and not try to find what's next for me and for those who I journey with.
Well, best of luck on that journey, and I will be checking in to see where it takes you.
That'd be great. Well, and it's so fun. I really enjoyed being able to journey with so many people, and including you. I've really enjoyed checking out the website, and I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation.
Thanks again to Spencer Burke for joining me today on Skeptico. If you'd like more information, you can check out his website at spencerburke.com or theooze.com. All those links are provided in the show notes at skeptico.com. That's skeptiko.com. There you'll also find links to all our previous shows and an email and Facebook link to me. Don't forget to tell your friends about Skeptico. Continue to write about us, link to us, blog to us. I certainly want to expand this community as much as it needs to be expanded, and your role in doing that is appreciated. I have an interesting interview coming up next episode with Dr. Pin von Lommel, so stay with me for that. And until next time, bye for now.